All right, I'm going.
All your questions are belong to me.
Belong to us, Ori. Belong to us.
Belong to me.
All right.
All right, Q&A. After a long and long pause, you were busy. I was busy. Everyone was busy. And to stop with the scotch.
We're finishing off the bottle of the Craig and Moore, distilled in 2001.
Oh, that's good. Good. So, all right, let's start with questions.
Questions.
Or a question, because it's a good question.
So this is episode 40, by the way.
Episode 40, check it out. Plus whatever amount of like little minis we have out there.
Like 20 minis or something. Yeah. Bullshit. All right. So this is from Gotham Works. It's pretty lengthy, so I'm just going to read it verbatim here. It says, do you ever assess a client's company culture as a potential weak point or vulnerability? I feel like you guys touched on this in episode 32 with Alan discussing human frailty and vulnerability. I feel like that can be taken a step further. In regard to the adversarial mindset, I feel like emotional intelligence is paramount. That is correct. Not only in regard to social engineering to accomplish a specific goal, but more importantly, for a client to use as a preventative measure. Let's take Google's recent admission of their internal culture being compared to Game of Thrones. This would be the perfect environment for an insider threat to develop.
Yep.
Or if an adversary were aware of this, they could potentially use social engineering to attain and develop a mole. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this. And so going back to his actual question, do you ever assess a client's company culture as a potential weak point or vulnerability?
The simple answer is absolutely yes. And before we go down the road, 1 minute story that touches this about, I would say, 6-7 years ago, the best thing we could do for redeeming this company was essentially to plant a seed of doubt within one single employee in a highly regarded marketing team within the company. And because of the culture of the company, that person managed to secure such an amount of negativity that at the end of the end provided the in that we needed to essentially own the whole company. So absolutely yes.
Cool.
Oh, I just answered the question.
All right, episode 40 over.
Done.
No.
No, but seriously, it's one of the things I think Dan and I talk about a lot is understanding who you're dealing with at many levels. And one of the things that you need to understand is who this company or who the organization is, who are the people within the organization. If it's a public or a private corporation in the corporate America, whatever, a startup, understand the industry they belong to. And then go down to the fine details where you understand how people work within the corporation or the organization. What is their I wouldn't say MO, modus operandi. It's more like understanding how they work within the organization, right? Once you understand what is the how they communicate with each other, the things they do for fun, the free time, are there like work freaks like people in Apple where they just work like they don't know the seriously like they close themselves and just work until the thing is done, or some other companies where hey comes like every day 4 p.m. they just go drinking or I mean once you understand how people react to each other and handle each other within the organization, you can begin to factor in some good stuff in, right? Part of your recon.
Yeah. In my opinion, a company's culture is indicative of the policies and standards that they have as well. Mm-hmm. So a culture only exists as much as an organization allows it to. And that's like through organic, I guess, growth of that culture in between people, between, how they do things like Ori was saying. And so if you're taking it a step back and you're looking at your target, you're looking at, say, a company's culture, like – that should help you make informed decisions or have insight when you're doing your reconnaissance phase or your intelligence gathering of what kind of people are you dealing with? What is okay versus not okay?
Right.
So like if you know, really lame example, but if you're, you know, doing that reconnaissance and you see that, you know, the security mindedness of people as they walk in the building, they just hold the door open for everyone behind them. You can start making inferences of security training is probably not that great. Mm-hmm. You know, tailgating is probably easy,
right.
You know, things like that. And so there's a level of trust there that you can start to infer that if you look like the part, you can most likely get your way in through the front door, you know.
Right.
So that's it's pretty important. And like we can go pretty deep into, you know, going back to what Alan was talking about in episode 32 of the, you know, the human consciousness, what makes a good person bad. And
well, and if I remember correctly, he said there are no bad people, right?
Well, that's true. It's the actions they take,
right?
But,
exactly.
And then how to potentially social engineer those people.
Yeah, but social engineering could be it's a double-edged sword here, right? Don, wow.
Yeah, I'm done the scotch already, man. Time for the Highland Park. Okay. Dark Origins.
Jesus. better step up already. Although
this is almost gone too.
Yeah, I've been drinking quite a bit. But by the way, before we continue, to all the veterans out there, really, thank you for your service, and please remember why you did it and what is the reason you did it, right? So thank you for your service. I can't believe, totally forgot to mention it in the beginning.
In the opening?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's no better time than the time that's now.
Correct.
And speaking of which, thank you for your service, Ori.
Oh, I know. I didn't.
Cheers, man. Anything.
Cheers. Anyway, going back, social engineering is a double-edged sword in that. On the one hand, you'll get a ton of value out of that and potentially... What?
Sorry, I'm making the face like I just ate shit. Highland Park mixed with a little bit of that Craigamore.
Oh, shit.
Oh my God.
Get you the kicks.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
All right. Well,
sorry to derail you.
But you do that every time. It's okay.
I didn't say anything this time. It was just my face.
Damn. Okay. Anyway, back again. Social engineering, double-edged sword.
Yes, sir.
Because on the one hand, you can get information you need. You might get it the in you need. On the other hand, if you do it wrong, you burn.
Oh, yeah. You burn big time. You tip your hand off and... they know what you look like. They know what you sound like,
yep.
Depending on if it's in person or...
Exactly. You know. So you have to be very careful. Now, if you want to use social engineering as a way to get to the culture and exploit the culture, you have to get your facts right. So learn. A lot of companies that have a specific culture that they are very proud of, they put it online. They talk about it. They make videos of it. So you can begin to learn and you know, use the right lingo. You have to sound like them if you want to exploit that, right? On top of that, if they have a certain image, because the culture calls for a certain image, you can mimic that image. And if you walk in, if you want to do some overt collection or some more kind of, you know, hands-on collection, you want to go into either the building or be somewhere near the people, you can look like them. And it'll give you the amount of trust, enough trust with the people to get the things that you need. All because you just exploited the culture, right?
Yeah, and since we're talking about social engineering, apply for a job. Come on.
You talk about it all the time.
All the time, apply for a job. People will... feel questions, they'll reveal things about, you know, the culture as well as the organization.
LinkedIn. Go to LinkedIn and read the open positions.
Yep, LinkedIn's great. Also, one thing I haven't mentioned before was you could, you know, pretend like you're a journalist or pretend like a lot of people do things like, what's that magazine where they keep reaching out to you all the time? Like the CIO magazine or CSO magazine.
Yeah, one of those. Oh,
yeah, pretend like you're a journalist or you know you're an editor for one of these places, or that there's an award that you want to give. I know you did that one before.
Yeah.
You can basically just sit down with anyone in a company and just ask questions. You know, if you're from MSNBC or if you're from whatever.
Oh, they'll either bring you in, or at least they'll give you a way to contact them directly. And that's a huge win, because now you have someone inside that can vouch for you. If you were on the phone with whatever, John Doe, next time you just go to the building, and if they stop you, hey, I'm here to see John Doe, they will call him and say, you know, Ori's here for you. Ori, yeah, from, you know, MSNBC. Oh, yeah, whatever, you know, tell them to come up, right? You have that level of trust now. Plus you speak their lingo because you did your due diligence.
Yep.
I hope they answer the questions. No, seriously, it sounds like a simple thing to do, and it's a great question, and the answer continues to be yes. The question is really not whether you do it or not, is to what level you do it. Again, you have to be tactful here because you can get burned. And if you are a red teamer doing the real thing, you want to remain fairly anonymous, and you want to remain fairly, you want to do it in a way that people will not be able to guess what you're doing. I'm looking for a word, but I can't get it at the moment. Anyway, do it in a way that people cannot guess what you're going to do. Because next time you're going to do it, you're not going to repeat it. You're going to be different. So,
yep.
Don't create a pattern. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Definitely don't create a pattern.
Yeah.
Unless you mean to create a pattern.
Well, that's for another story.
Yeah.
We need to do the four elements of red teaming at some point. Yeah.
I mean, we've got 40 minutes left if you want to do that, or we can do it next time. Let's do it next time.
Okay.
We'll have a good bottle of scotch for next time.
Sounds good, man. Let's do that for... Yeah, maybe we can have Mark Mateski as well to talk about that. Cause,
yeah,
he'll be the right guy to talk about this. Or Matt DeVos. DeVos. Yeah. Can't pronounce a French name, sorry.
So I was, you know, to bridge the gap between social engineering, I need to look up my phone real quick. I was watching Turner Classic Movies like all weekend while I was doing things, mm-hmm. like, you know.
In places?
you mean like on my phone while I'm in my basement grinding away picks and stuff?
Oh, how's that going, man?
It's going good. Creating a whole bunch of kind of ugly ass picks that are starting to work, so.
Well, that's taking for a drive.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm looking for this movie that was on, I want to say like Commandos or something like that. It's around the time that Charles Bronson made The Great Escape.
Oh, okay.
The Dirty Dozen.
Oh, that was a great movie.
The late 60s movie. So yeah. The Dirty Dozen was on, and at the end, like the capstone before they went on to do their actual real op was basically Red vs. Blue Forces.
Yeah.
And the ingenuity of their force in order to kind of, I guess, not get sent back to the brig or whatever like that before they were going to get all killed, because they were a whole bunch of convicts that
right.
were trained for the mission. They used all these social engineering things, like pretending that they were hurt, you know, pretending that they were the enemy. It was some pretty cool stuff, so I highly recommend watching The Dirty Dozen. To see kind of the red versus blue play back and forth for about 20 minutes in that movie.
Awesome.
So
yeah, I haven't watched that movie in years.
Yeah, lots of social engineering stuff there. And then actually right before that was actually The Great Escape.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why that came to my head also had Charles Bronson in it.
And that's Steve the one McQueen. With the soccer game? No, The Great Escape?
No, that's when they were digging underneath the German prison camp to get outside of the fence.
Okay. Oh, I'm confused with one with Sylvester Stallone also. It's like World War II. They're playing soccer game.
Are you talking about like Rainbow Four?
No. So there's a. It's new. Of course, a newer movie, but they were in a German prisoner camp, and they organized. I think it was a soccer game against the Germans. It was a bunch of Brits, Americans, and other forces being held in there as prisoners, and then they organized this soccer tournament to escape. And I thought it was a great escape, but.
Escape plan?
No, it's no from now, man. It's from like probably the 70s or 80s. I don't know. Maybe I got it wrong, man. That damn bomb sent a bunch of things towards my head. Sometimes I forget.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
No. Anyway. Cool. No, Dirty Dozen. Jesus.
Yeah, The Dirty Dozen and The Great Escape. Really good movies about social engineering. In The Great Escape, they were learning German. They were putting on the German clothes. They were getting their cover stories down.
Mm-hmm.
Looking like the enemy, talking like the enemy, being able to blend in, do what the enemy does. Some got away, some didn't. I don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it.
But right.
Highly recommended to kind of see what are some of the tradecraft things that you should be doing, not just, I don't want to put the social engineering label on.
Right. Yeah, but the thing is, one of the things that people really don't touch much in the world of red teaming, because they focus only on the digital aspects of it as of late, is the fact that in order to mimic as much as you can realistically an adversary, you have to think, and I think we touched this with either Mark Montesky, also with Paul probably, it's about the East versus West and how you need to think like them and act like them to be able to perform like them, right? So it makes total sense that if you're training to pretend to be a German Nazi, you're wearing the clothing, you're reading the books, you're eating the food, you're trying to go native, right? You're trying to become as close as you can to that thing that you're trying to mimic. And I think we had a conversation with Rob Dubois about this. He was saying, hey, I'm learning how to be a terrorist so I can mimic that. It was a great conversation with him. It makes total sense to me. And in the past, part of the recon package that we were trying to put together with the team was essentially literature that was mandatory reading before every project, from magazines to books to scouting Google from maps of the area or best like cultural things about the country where the company, the organization we were trying to retain was located, what would be the criminal organization in that country that could possibly come after them, for example. All that was mandatory reading. And it kind of built the persona and built the history behind the simulated attacker. So it was the most fun of the whole assessment. Because I enjoy kind of learning how bad people think.
There are no bad people, Ray.
Damn. I wanted to be a bad people. Come on. We need to have him back again here.
Which, Rob, Paul?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
All at the same time?
All at the same
time. Have a round table?
You know what? We can have Paul and, what's it called? Episode 32.
Alan.
Yeah. If we can have Paul and Alan together.
Oh my God.
And just shut up and let them go at each other.
Well, we should take a trip down to MacDill sometime again and maybe have Alan come down and meet up with Paul. And
yeah. That can be arranged. That shouldn't be hard.
Yeah.
Well, now if we can get to fly an Osprey, then that's the one thing I haven't done yet. Yeah. I need to fly an Osprey, man. So let's make it happen.
All right, let's do it.
Anyway, so what's next? You have something in mind.
Well, we were going to talk about the question. You asked me to burn 20 minutes, so dude, with my derailing, I hit the 20-minute mark.
Perfect. On spot, on target.
So now we got 40 minutes.
Cool.
I'm just kidding. We don't have 40 minutes. That would make it an hour. We have 25 minutes.
All right, whatever. It's been a long weekend, so yeah.
So if we're going to save the four elements of red teaming, you wanted to talk about the active shooter.
Oh, yeah. Scenarios. I wanted to talk about the active shooter. So there was, you know, probably everyone knows there was a, there was a horrible shooter in shooting in Pennsylvania, in the Jewish community. I'm Jewish. You know, beside the fact that it was a synagogue, it was a hatred thing, right? And most active shooter scenarios are either hatred or some wacko that has something against someone and decides, okay, I'm gonna create, you know, send in revenge. And it's interesting to read everything that was written immediately after, because it shows people have no clue. Some journalists interview some really cool people that have the information nailed down, but for the most part, everything that was written was bullshit. Especially the people that are trying to give solutions, in my opinion, and maybe my opinion is bullshit as well. But that's my opinion. And I wanted to touch, just to open a discussion and maybe questions from the people listening to this, as to what is a good way of red teaming public locations, red teaming places of worship, red teaming schools, you know, red teaming public offices and stuff like that, in order to, if not prevent, because I don't think you can prevent it, at least get it to a point where it's extremely hard for an actual shooter to come and do it things, right? Because I don't think you can prevent it. It's not a thing that you can say, hey, you know, we're going to lock everything down and no one's going to be able to get in, because you need people to get in. I mean, it's just no way around. It's like trying to prevent a computer from being hacked. Unless you have it in a room behind closed doors all the time, never to touch the internet, never to be turned on, it's not going to happen.
Well, you saw Mission Impossible, right, when he came out of that fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
That wasn't connected to any network. That was behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Behind a man trap.
Yes, yeah. And I did rappel into a fifth floor just to get to a server room. But but the server room was connected, so it doesn't matter. I just thought it was the fun thing to do.
You thought you'd do it the hard way?
Yeah.
You know, not to derail, I want to keep it on track, actually. Mm-hmm. A lot of our followers or listeners or readers or, you know, I'll just say followers in general. I noticed after the Pennsylvania thing, the California thing, the Florida thing, people are now starting to post saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm standing outside of my child's kindergarten class, or I'm standing outside of, you know, church this Sunday to make sure that, you know, no one gets in. Like, so I think it's becoming, because there's been basically a mass shooting every week for a little bit, it's becoming more and more at the forefront of people's minds of, hey, we should do something.
Yeah.
But to your point, like, that we should do something, this is what we should do, has been complete bullshit-ish.
So, I mean, having the community get together and patrolling all the stuff is a great thing to do. But that is a reactive measure, which is necessary, of course, don't get me wrong. But we should talk also about a program. We should talk about a preventative measure, right? And that's what red teaming is. It's a preventative measure. I mean, reactive after the fact is okay, because you have lessons learned and you put in place something that you possibly, you know, prevented for the future. But it already happened, and it's unfortunate because people died. Otherwise, you would not be doing this, right? Yep. So let's talk about a little bit about the elements of security here, right? So when we're talking about elements of security, you have, again, people think security guards with guns and a gate. Yeah, okay. If knowing what I know about terrorism in Israel, that doesn't stop anything. Simple, right? Quoting here, Amit Tobin, there is an outer circle and there's an inner circle, right? You are focusing on the immediate inner circle, and even that at a fraction, with just a security guard and a door, right? You are forgetting inside the building, you are forgetting the perimeter, and you are forgetting the area, the outer circle, which is way outside the perimeter, where bad people can actually come and survey what they want to do and take their time because no one is looking at them, right? So there are many aspects here on security, not just the physical aspects. There is, of course, the people, yep, and who does what and when. There is the digital aspects, cameras, alarms, all kind of monitoring and alerting you can put in place, not just for the law enforcement and first responders, but for yourself, right? Things that can give you an advantage that someone is coming, early warning, right? And then you have the combination of everything, which is the actual program. You're going to have one or two people on top of that program that will be directing, okay, we're going to start doing roaming patrols, for example. We're going to have a bunch of cameras in trees, wireless cameras. It doesn't have to be like a big deal. Wireless cameras in the outer perimeter that once in, they're going to give us enough information about things that are going on outside the building. We're going to have people come in and assess the building to make sure that all the doors that need to be locked are locked. The doors that can remain open are open. And then avenues of entries, avenues of surveillance, avenues of escape. Anything has to be accounted for. And that's what people don't get into. And I think it was Brian Green. He took about helping secure his church.
Yeah, Brian.
Right, Brian. And he did a wonderful job because not only he gathered people and then walked them through a plan of how to secure the parking lots, how to secure inside the church, around the church, and then the perimeter immediately after the parking lot. But he also created a program where everyone is currently rotating, doing roaming patrols, talking to people. You get a sense. It's a very Israeli way of doing things. You talk to people, people that you don't know, new to the church, for example, new to a synagogue, new to a mosque, new to any kind of worship place, or publicly for that matter, right? You talk to them. Hey, you ask them a bunch of questions that can give you a sense of whether a person actually has to be there or is just coming and it's just giving you bullshit, right? Like a simple, how you doing? And you, someone that is intent on doing harm, shooting someone, he's focused on that. He doesn't want to be stopped. He want to go and do things. You stop the person and you ask him, how you doing? Chances are he will not be able to answer. At least not immediately. He'll be like a little stutter here and there, right? So create a program, understand the things that can go wrong with that program, understand what you are trying to protect, understand how you want to protect it, and understand what allows you to protect it, and that is people and technology, and you have to combine them. You cannot rely only on technology, and you cannot rely only on people.
Right.
Right? Again, it's like social engineering, it goes both ways, right? Some things can be used for good, some things can be used for bad. So, having armed guards around, sure, provided those armed guards are trained, because having an armed guard with a gun and no training, someone that wants to do harm, they're just going to shoot the guard and it's just going to go in.
The worst thing you can do is have somebody with a gun who has no training, because they'll either hurt themselves.
Yeah, and hurt someone. Yeah. Or do nothing. They're just going to be so freaking scared, they're not going to do anything.
Right.
Better option is to hire a security company that actually knows what it's doing and provide training for your community. Pick, 3, 4, 5 people within the community that has what it takes in terms of mindset and train them.
I think what you're saying is key, community, right?
Right.
So where you're not saying church, public place, X, Y, Z, place of worship,
whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's the community. So right. A community can be like what people associate a community with, a larger grouping of like geographical area of people, mm-hmm. or it could be a community of like-minded people that go to a certain place in public.
Yep.
So I think that's key of a community of people that have similar thoughts, desires, wishes,
right.
ideas, you know, that kind of stuff is important to abstract your way. Instead of just saying, hey, I'm going to focus on the immediacy of the inner circle, so to right. speak, you're thinking of the community. Well, the community is much larger than just that
thing. And right that is exactly you. Because now that I have these four or five people within the community, and they don't need to be only in the church or synagogue or whatever. They can be the owner of the cafe two blocks away from the synagogue, right? And he can keep an eye. You know, he has a lot of potential. He can talk to customers, he can get a sense of what's going on around the synagogue, church, whatever. Public office, right? He can give you an early warning. Plus, he can be trained in really understanding the signs that something is about to go wrong, right? Situational awareness. So have, you know, you have to rely on people in your community, the immediate community, and you have to rely on people that are somewhat closer to you as well. Right. And that could be local police. It could be, like I said, someone in the restaurants, a cafe, whatever. It could be, you know, I mean, this is actually, you know, something we did a while back to help someone in Texas. There was a veteran asking for money in a crossroad. He was homeless. He was suffering from either PTSD or some other issues. What we did with that person is we managed to secure for him a job that will pay a good money on the weekends. It will give him a place to sleep and it will give him a warm, you know, meal during the day. And the idea, we worked with that person, we trained that person, and he was the first layer of security in a multi-layer security. He will be the first person that would talk to all the people in the cars. He was asking for money still, but he was doing it to collect intelligence. He didn't really need the money at that point, but he was doing it to collect intelligence. He was asking for people, he was knocking on doors, he was looking inside the cars, and if something was not right, he immediately would call us. So that's an example. Pointing out there's a lot of stuff you can do with people around you. Second, once you hire a security company, and again, a security company that actually doesn't provide security guards just like that, but a company that can work with your staff, company that can work with law enforcement and first responders in your town, for example, providing them an overall program, right? Get that if you want to hire someone, right? Don't just hire some random security guard company. They don't care about you. They're not going to step in front of a bullet to save someone in your community. And most likely, they have no training. So if you want to get someone that is going to do all that, either it has to come from your own community or it has to be one of those security companies where they work with you. They become part of you. It's someone that they place there long term. It's not someone that just comes, you know, a couple times a week. And it's all good. No, it's a person that you, and it's going to be expensive, but it's a security of your people. So spend money on it. Third, if you're using technology, make sure technology is actually, it's reality. You know, putting cameras that are looking at everything and they do nothing. Sure, you have footage if something goes wrong, but again, we're trying to be preventive here. So place cameras in two places. Place cameras in places where they are seen. So it's a kind of deterrent scene. Oh, there's cameras here. Maybe I shouldn't go to this building. Maybe I should go to the next building. And second, put cameras on a system where either you have facial recognitions, you have behavioral recognitions, and today there's a ton of open source software you can run to do that, right? Or pay money and they do it for you, right? So things that just happen and they are kind of suspicious, you get an alert, period.
That brings me to a story that just came out about China. You know how China has this huge surveillance network?
Yep.
Wherever you go in China, pretty much every single street corner, traffic light, et cetera, is videoed these days.
Been there, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the team is over there right now, actually, two guys.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah.
Nasty place.
Yeah. They're basically tracking people through the way they walk now.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing facial recognition on everyone. Right. But now they're doing it for the way you walk. So if you're wearing a disguise, you're pulling that hat down. They catch you in the dark, or they can't see your face, but they can see how you walk. They're now building profiles on people and how they walk.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
And then there's kind of related. There's this guy, Justin. He's a freaking Python wizard. He does a lot of Python, like security training.
Right.
I'm blanking on his last name right now. I think it's like Justin Sense, maybe. He does a lot of like security automation and Python stuff. I remember he was teaching a course a while back, how to train your Python program, like
right.
through machine learning, to recognize images with weapons in them.
Oh, nice.
And over time, it would be able to, I think it had like a 90-95% ratio of success or something.
Cool.
He posted it a long time ago, but just Google around for that. You can find it. But yeah, he was able to do that. So if you have your, you know, a camera going and you want to, you know, yes, surveillance cameras are great for deterrence, but if you don't have somebody watching the screen, then it's just going to be forensic evidence after the fact.
Again, it's okay, but that's what we're looking for.
Right. Yeah. Now. So if you have, like you said, open source software, you know, adapt the Python script, whatever it might be, to look for weapons or look for things that shouldn't belong.
Right.
And get an alert and act on it.
I mean, if you and you know, I've seen it done already. I mean, if you have someone randomly pacing in a parking lot, that's a red flag. So someone should get an alarm, right?
Right.
You know, the reality is that someone goes into the car, out of the car, into something. Maybe he might be like a minute or two on the phone on the way out, something. But if he's randomly pacing and changing locations every 5 minutes, something is wrong. Right? So use technology wisely. Use cameras wisely. Don't just use them for like recording. Give them a purpose, right? even mount dummies across, you know, around the perimeter, the outer circle, with signs that says, you know, perimeter is being monitored. It's a good deterrence, right? And the last thing I wanted to talk is medical training, trauma training. This is something that people don't want to touch. I don't know why. It's taboo or something. Shit will happen, as we've seen, unfortunately. And active shooter scenarios are fast. They start very fast and violently, and they finish very fast. They don't linger. They don't continue for hours. It's a matter of minutes. First responders are not going to be there to save you, unfortunately. Police might react quickly. By the time they get there, chances are the whole thing just went down, done. That's why it's on you to be able to, one, defend yourself or prevent it if you know, at all costs. And second, after it went down, and let's assume that someone gunned down the shooter, right? Or the shooter killed himself, or the police finally managed to get him. Now you have to go into trauma mode, and you have to save lives. You have to hit training across the stuff, not just about how to make sure people are out of harm, but you have to stop bleeding. You have to open airways. You have to be able to adapt to the situation. I mean, bullet wounds are not your typical accident. You know, you break a bone or you broke a... It's not that. It's horrible. It's wet. It's horrible. It's bleeding. It's and it usually comes with collapsed lungs or flooded lungs, unable to breathe, broken bones, exposed things. It's horrible. Believe me, if you see it one time, it's horrible. So the more you practice to stop that, and that means understanding, I don't know, TCCC, for example, is trauma care under on combat, right? Or having first aid done by EMC guys that, no EMC, EMS guys. EMS guys that are trained in trauma, right? And then have the right equipment. Don't have a boo-boo kit, you know, a normal, like, you know, first aid kit in your offices, in your church, in your synagogue, anywhere. Have a proper trauma kit. And I can, you know, and if go to the blog, there are many examples of really good trauma kits and where to get them, right? But you have to be trained. Right. You have to be trained. You have to have staff that is trained in that. And that is the last thing you have to do to have a holistic program. You want to prevent, you want to use technology right, you want to have training done right, and last, you want to have the right amount of trauma care training.
And I like how you've mentioned training three times.
Right.
It's vastly important. And with training, like, doesn't Ed teach a course where you have to, like, struggle to get your tourniquet on and, like, they put all the pig blood on you or whatever
to make sure
that it's slippery, that you can actually get the tourniquet on?
I think so. I mean, that's how we would train. We were right. Being hosed out with all kind of slimy things. Hey, put on your tourniquet, yeah. Or open your rack and try to get to your first aid kit, right? Yeah. It's a different world. But yeah, so that's what I want to say. You know, ask questions. I've been thinking about running a whole post about this.
Do it.
Yeah, I should. But in the meantime, if you go to Amit Tobin's website, he has an amazing post of the kind of like how to defend Jewish organizations, but that can be translated to any kind of organization. He walks you through the do's and don'ts. He walks you through the parts of it. It's very well written, right? Is it Protection Circle? No.
Yeah.
ProtectionCircle.com. Amit Tobin had a great article, but I'll probably write one myself, right?
Yeah. And then his book, Surveillance Zone.
Surveillance Zone, yeah. Highly recommended as well. Just to understand how things can go wrong and how people can look at you and learn from you, right? Apropos, like, cultural, you know, using cultures to penetrate stuff. Cool.
Yeah, and the just to go back real quick, the Justin guy.
Yeah.
His website's automatingocent.com.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I didn't want to leave the listeners with, hey, go Google that thing. Wanted to make sure
that, Google that shit,
since I mentioned it, automatingocent.com.
Google that shit.
Yeah, or Google that shit. Bing it. You know, that's Ori's favorite.
Ugh.
Lycos, whatever search engine he uses.
Lycos?
Dude.
Did you just say Lycos?
I'm dating myself, man.
Damn. What's next? Yahoo?
No, what was the one before Yahoo?
Copernicus? No, that was an aggregation, right? Copernicus?
Yeah, there was... man. Let's not even date ourselves.
Gopher?
Yeah, Gopher. The BBSs and all that. Yeah. Cool. So that's episode 40. This is just kind of like a Q&A random shit.
Yeah, kind of winging it. It was a long weekend. An even longer week. A lot of stuff. But next week we have a guest. It's a good guest. And the week after that, I think this is gonna be a weird week.
Yeah, I got some travel coming up. I'll be gone for 2 weeks spread over the next month or so. End of November, I'll be doing things, and then mid December.
Oh, in those places, cool. Yeah. That's gotta be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Well, bring some t-shirts. Nice. Cool. Yeah. In those cases, I'll you know, I have a bunch of guests in the pipeline, so we can get them rolling.
We need to plan who's going to be on episode 50.
Oh,
that's 10 from now.
So it's not going to be 10 weeks. It's going to be, yeah, maybe 10 weeks from now. I do have an idea, and if I can get him on board, let me start making phone calls.
Cool.
Episode 50, yeah. Yeah. Cool. Anyway, so episode 40, kind of wing it. Sorry if it's not what you were expecting. I think it was a good episode with a ton of knowledge. Keep the questions coming. I do have a ton of questions in my inbox. I will get to them. Sorry for the delays. It's just, again, a lot of work lately.
Yeah.
Ask questions. We'll answer as much as we can. Threadteams.net. And you have a new website.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Send it out. Come on.
Before we were talking, I said, no, we're not hawking the website on the podcast.
Well, now we are.
Yeah, it's adversarialmindset.com.
I'll put them in the notes.
Yeah. So, new website, not much content there, but it's mainly just my musings of my thoughts, just like Ori has his thoughts. So
I have thoughts.
Oh, occasionally you have thoughts.
Yeah, well, I try not to think too much, because bad shit happens.
Yeah, that's true. And then people die.
Yeah, that's true. Well, at least a while back, that was true. Today, I don't know. Cool. All right. Episode 40. Cheers.